Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani and Ayi Green on the Progressive Radio Network. I have a great show for you today. My guest will be Kate Brasheras. She is the executive director at Edible Schoolyard, New York City. And I will tell you more about that in just a little bit. But first, I want to, you know, share with you some things in the news, some ways that you can take action. And share my weekly recipe with you, of course. So first, I just want to let you know, if you have not gotten your tickets yet for the NOFA New York's Climate of Change Gala, which is taking place on Friday, August 23rd, you want to do that right away. Tickets are going fast. They will sell out. And it's going to be a great, great evening. The guest of honor is Isabella Rossellini. Onika Abraham is also going to be speaking, as well as Scott Chasky. And there's going to be farm-to-table food and great speakers, silent and live auction. And the Locust Grove Estate is just a beautiful place. So if you can get away and come to the gala, we would love to see you there. I will be going and have a full table of friends joining us, so I hope to see some of you there. I don't know how many of you saw the article in the New York Times about the downside of a sweet tooth, but we've been hearing for so long, you know, back when, you know, Tom Caligio's wife did the film A Place at the Table, we've been hearing so much about the downside of sugar and the dangers of sugar and how sugar causes not just obesity and heart disease and adds to type 2 diabetes and obesity, tooth decay, liver disease. It also feeds cancer, and it's just really bad. And so many people are addicted to it. It is addictive. And so you really have to work on limiting that. But then when you do indulge, make it delicious. You know, I just want to encourage people. I mean, I raised my kids not eating a lot of sugar, but when they did eat sugar, it was a homemade chocolate chip cookie using whole wheat pastry flour and organic chocolate chips and organic sugar and butter. And it makes a difference. Not to mention the amount of love that I put into those cookies, which I really believe helps affect the, you know, some of the negativity from the sugar as well. So imbue your sweets with love. Make them at home or buy them at the farmer's market or source them where you know somebody is making them with love and using the best ingredients possible. And just have a little. Try not to, you know, eat the whole thing. Just, you know, savor it, put a bite in, close your eyes, really savor the flavor and appreciate it and think of gratitude and think of where it came from and think of the people that grew it. You know, just change the paradigm and make it, you know, something really that you can appreciate but also put away. It's just so important. So I hope hope you all take a moment to read that article because it really, really is a good one. I don't know how many of you saw the presidential debates last night and Tuesday night. There's so many candidates and there's so many issues to talk about. I have to say I really loved Marianne Williamson, even though unfortunately I don't feel like she really has a chance. But she really brings up a lot of issues that I think people really need to be thinking about, you know, our economy and whose backs was it built on, and retributions and, you know, fixing the healthcare system is really important. But why is everybody sick? We need to really look at the subsidies that are making unhealthy food so cheap for us. And we've talked about that a lot. I'm sure that will come up in my conversation with Kate later. But why do we subsidize the food that's bad for us? What is the true cost of food? Why don't we charge companies that are polluting our soil to clean up their mess instead of the taxpayer having to pay for it? There's so many issues revolving around health, and it really comes down to, well, of course, genetics plays a part of it, but the foods we eat are so important. And I talk about that all the time, and it's just really, really important that we pay attention to the food we eat and that, you know, we start making food part of the conversation of the presidential debate. I mean, healthcare is important, absolutely. But why is everybody getting sick? We need to talk about the food. We need to talk about the environment, the environmental degradation and the causes of so much cancer and autoimmune diseases and the, you know, the hormone disruptors that are everywhere. We need to really start looking at it, and you realize that everything is so interconnected. It's all entwined, and you can't fix one thing without addressing the other. It has to be done organically together as a full organism. You know, one of the problems in our society is we try to separate everything and look at things in their own little bubble, and you really can't, because one thing is connected to the next, it's connected to the next, and you really have to look at it, the whole picture. You have to look at the wholesomeness of it, and, you know, try to deal with it on every level, and it's huge. So I don't have the answers, but all I know is we all can't be complacent. We all need to become activists and let our voices be heard and speak up. One of the things I wrote about this week in my newsletter was the herbicide paraquat. There's a new piece of legislation that's been introduced to Congress to cancel all uses of pesticide. This pesticide is another one that's really bad. It kills by burning living tissues, and it affects people's eyes, lungs, liver, kidneys, and we need to get it off the market. And there are organic alternatives that can be used. The problem is that these biotech companies, the companies making these pesticides, have so much power. They lobby. They have more lobbyists and spend more money to push our elected officials to support their causes than we have money to fight it in Congress. And it's just really, really bad. So we see that here with the EPA. I actually didn't even know the EPA has an office called the Office of Inspector General, and it's their job to perform audits and investigations on the EPA to take a look at whether they're doing their job. And they're clearly not doing their job. And one of the things that they need to do is also test for the combinations of when you combine certain pesticides together, another chemical is formed, and that can be even worse. The same way, you know, I just even remember, you know, being warned when I was younger and I was cleaning that you never mix bleach and ammonia together because the reaction together is so toxic. Things in combination with others create other toxins, and that needs to be looked at. We need to depend on our government offices to do that. So the EPA is clearly not doing their job. We have a similar situation with the USDA not doing their job in checking out all the biotech companies and these chemicals and in combination. And we also have a problem with the Food and Drug Administration. They don't test drugs and the combinations of those drugs. I mean, that's one of my biggest peeves with the vaccinations. One vaccination might not be so bad, might be even good. But all these vaccinations in combination, I mean, somebody was telling me that by the time their child would be 21, they would have had like 80 vaccinations. I mean, how can we do that to our bodies? Inject all these vaccinations and have no idea of the real causes and combinations. And then you look at everybody's health and it's, you know, not going down, it's going downhill. You know, kids born today have a shorter life expectancy than their parents. That's the first time that this has happened. Usually generation after generation have a longer lifespan. That's not what happening. So again, we just need to pay attention. One thing all the Democratic nominees agree on is we need to get our current person out of the White House. He is just bad on all levels. So let's work on that. But pay attention, become activists, and let's try to move things in the right direction together. Some great things are going on in the New York area that you want to know about. This weekend, there's an edible herb walk, wild edible and medicinal weed walk with Ellen Kamai, also known as the Natural Nurse. She is also a guest on a host on the Progressive Radio Network. And Ellen Kamai has been teaching for over 40 years. She knows so much about plants, and she's a wonderful guide. So check out her website at thenaturalnurse.com. And this weekend, on August 3rd, she's having a walk at St. Joseph's Farm out in Brentwood. She also has one coming up in Oyster Bay on August 19th, but she has loads of events coming up, and she, you know, is just a wealth of information. So check out her website. August 5th through 9th, the Cloud Institute's annual Sustainability Curriculum Design Studio is going on at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck. August 9th through the 11th is the NOFA Summer Conference. And as you know, I'm on the board of NOFA New York, which is the New York chapter of the Northeast Organic Farming Association. But all of the Northeast states have their own NOFA chapter. And so this summer conference is the one time a year where all the NOFAs come together. So you'll have NOFA Connecticut, NOFA Vermont, NOFA Massachusetts, NOFA Maine, as well as New York, all together. This year it will be at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts, and the theme is Nutrition Matters, Soil Health Builds Human Health. So if you can get away up to Amherst over that weekend, the summer conference never disappoints. It's always amazing. August 19th, Cornell Cooperative Extension is continuing their Garden to Table series, and that one is a freezer berry jam. So what to do with all your extra berries, how to make some jam and save it for a later date. And I already mentioned the NOFA Gala coming up on August 23rd. On September 8th, is the 13th annual North Fork Foodie Tour, and that's really fun. It's a self-guided tour. Reconstructionist Synagogue out on the North Shore sets this up, and they've been doing it for 13 years now. But it's a self-guided tour. They've made arrangements with all these different farms and food establishments for you to stop by and have tastes and tours and see it all. So that's a wonderful thing. So just Google the North Fork Foodie Tour and you'll find out the information there. Or I have all this information on my website. September 26th, the Coalition for Healthy School Food, which is responsible for pushing through the Meatless Monday in New York City schools and bringing more plant-based food into schools. They are having their annual gala on September 26th. And usually they have a great jazz band. This year, for the first time, they're having comedians. And the theme is All Joking Aside, Healthy School Food Gala. And so they have some comedians lined up. It should be fun. I'm always there serving up some vegan food. There's so many vendors with delicious, delicious vegan food, from appetizers, main courses, and desserts, drinks. It's just a vegan heaven. So if you are plant-based and want to come and support healthy school food, even if you're not plant-based, but you know how important it is for people to eat better, come on down and support the Coalition for Healthy School Food. And then October 5th, save the date for the New York Times Food Festival, which is coming up in Bryant Park. That's the 5th and the 6th. There's so many different events. Go online, check it out, and get tickets before they sell out. And now I want to share with you my recipe and then invite my guest on. This week I made a corn-encrusted tofu with Japanese stir-fry vegetables. For the corn crust, and I have to say this is not a heavy-duty crust because I don't use any egg to keep it on. So some of the crust falls off. But I have to tell you, that's one of the best parts. You have all these crumbs at the end that you can sprinkle on top, and it adds crunchiness to the dish, and it was really a nice surprise. So and you should also know that my recipes, very often, they're really just, what did I make for dinner? And sometimes they're more successful than others. Like I said, the crust didn't stay on so well, but I had a nice surprise at the end with the crunchies that had come off the tofu. So, this is, just a weekday night's dinner. So I used and a half blocks of extra firm tofu. I buy the sprouted tofu that's organic. It's just a little bit healthier. But you always want to make sure when you're using tofu that you use organic, because soybeans are one of the most genetically modified crops in this country. And so if it's not organic, you can be sure that it's genetically modified. So for the corn crust, I used 1/4 cup of organic coconut milk, 1 cup of organic corn flakes, 1/4 cup of organic tortilla chips that I just made into crumbs, just crumbled them in my hands, 2 tablespoons of chives, 1/2 teaspoon of coriander, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper. And for the stir fry, I used 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1 onion cut into slivers, 2 carrots that I cut into julienne strips, 2 tablespoons minced garlic, 1 tablespoon minced ginger, 2 cups of broccoli florets, 2 cups of chopped kale, the stems removed, 1 1/2 cups of snow peas cut in half, 2 tablespoons tamari, 2 tablespoons mirin, and 1 tablespoon dark sesame oil. So I cut the tofu into cubes and laid them out on a clean dish towel to help remove the excess water. I combined the corn flakes, the tortilla chips, the chives, the coriander, the salt, and pepper in a large bowl. And in another bowl, I added the coconut milk. So I dipped the tofu cubes into the coconut milk first and then into the corn crumb mixture. And I laid those pieces of tofu out on a cookie sheet along with any of the extra crumbs that didn't stick to the tofu. But first I lined the cookie sheet with some parchment paper and sprayed that with just a little bit of oil. So I really wanted to keep the oil down to a minimum. And I baked it at 400 degrees for about 15 minutes. Turning is necessary because the back of my oven is much hotter than the front, so I have to turn the cookie sheet. Otherwise, the back burns and the front's not all the way cooked. So just know your oven. Meanwhile, while that was cooking in a large wok, I heated the other tablespoon of olive oil until it started shimmering. Then I added the onions and cooked those for about 5 minutes. I added the carrots, the garlic, and ginger. And whenever you're stir-frying, you always want to start with the root vegetables because they're the hardest. They take the longest to cook. So your onions go first, then your carrots. If you had parsnips, you put those into any other root vegetables. They just take longer. So I added the carrots along with the garlic and the ginger. Cooked that for another few minutes. Then I added the broccoli and cooked for another few minutes, mixing constantly. I like to cook it at a high heat, but you have to, it requires you really using a good spatula to keep mixing it and moving the vegetables around so they don't burn. I added 2 cups of kale, and then I added the tamari and the mirin, which gave a little bit of liquid to the wok and helped steam the kale. And if you find that the vegetables are sticking and you want to add more oil, resist that desire and instead add a tablespoon of water at a time to the wok. And you can almost use that instead of oil, or you can use that instead of oil. And again, it keeps the oil to a minimum when you're stir frying. Then I remove the encrusted tofu from the oven and I added that to the wok. And the extra corn crumbs that were on the sheet pan, I just left them there until the end, and I used those at the end for the garnish. I added the snow peas and just cooked that for 1 minute. Snow peas you want almost raw. Just get them warm, but you want them to be bright green and shiny, you know, and still crispy. Then at the very end, I added the dark sesame oil, and dark sesame oil is used as a seasoning, not for cooking. And then I served it immediately with some brown rice or whatever your favorite grain is. And I sprinkled the rest of those extra corn crumbs on top. And it was just delicious. And, you know, like I said, it's a midweek meal. You know, I don't spend more than 15, 20 minutes to pull it together. So enjoy that. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest to all of you. Kate Brashars is the executive director at Edible Schoolyard NYC. And the Edible Schoolyard is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to providing an edible education for every child in New York City. And the Edible Schoolyard partners with New York City Public Schools to cultivate healthy students and communities through hands-on cooking and gardening education. Kate is originally from London, but has lived in the U.S. for the past 15 years. And after a varied career spanning financial services and marketing, she turned to nonprofit management. And prior to the Edible Schoolyard, NYC, Kate worked at a charter school network. And she brings her passion for children, food, and gardening to the Edible Schoolyard. And Kate, are you with me?
I'm here, yes. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Nice to be on.
So I love your organization, the Edible Schoolyard. I've been a big follower of Alice Waters, who was the founder of the Edible Schoolyard out in California. But maybe you could share with my listeners who might not know about the Edible Schoolyard a little bit about its history.
Sure. So we are the New York branch, the New York arm of Edible Schoolyard. But it was founded, as you said, by Alice Waters, who I'm sure your listeners know is, you know, a visionary chef, chef and owner of Chez Panisse. And she founded the Edible Schoolyard project out in Berkeley, California, over 20 years ago now. And it was really her kind of vision that food should be taught in schools. And so out in Berkeley, she worked with a middle school there and built a 3-acre garden and really started to integrate, you know, farm-to-table lessons into the school curriculum, really making food a central part of the curriculum. So she started that in Berkeley 20 years ago, and then about 10 years ago now, our current board chair, John Lyons, who had been on the board of that program, decided that he wanted to bring the program here to New York and adapt it to meet the unique needs of New York City public schools and public school students. New York is obviously very different from Berkeley, California. The climate is different. The school system is different. It's a very different urban environment. So we are inspired by that vision and by, you know, Alice's she's an incredible visionary, you know, very, very single-minded and driven by this work and this vision. And we've brought that vision to life in New York, and we're a separate nonprofit specifically focused on the unique needs of New York City public schools. But thinking about how we bring food to schools in a really positive, hands-on, experiential way. So we integrate gardening and cooking into the school day and, yeah, have brought that vision to life in New York City public schools.
That's so amazing. So, I think one of the first things that comes to my mind, which I'm sure my listeners are wondering, is where do you have the gardens in New York City? Are they on rooftops? Because it sounds like that's an integral part of the program.
Yeah, so the first school that we went to, actually it's out in Brooklyn, in Gravesend, kind of near Coney Island. It actually, one of the reasons that we chose that school was that it had a really, really huge parking lot. So in that original school, we have about a half-acre garden, and it's an in-ground garden. So we worked with the school and the school construction agency and the Brooklyn Borough president and transformed that parking lot, you know, asphalt parking lot, into a garden organic farm. And, you know, we bought tons of soil, literally tons of soil from upstate New York. And so that garden it's an in-ground garden. So it's really beautiful. It's expansive. We have a little orchard. We have fruit trees there. We have chickens. We have a chicken coop. We have a little rice paddy. We have an extensive compost system. So that's a very, very extensive in-ground garden. That is a very, very unusual for New York. There is not a ton of space, as you know. In our other schools, and we're in about 22 schools across the city in various degrees of, you know, depth and involvement. In our other schools, most of the gardens tend to be container gardens. So, you know, we'll take a little sliver of a playground or a space at the front of the school. We have a school in East Harlem where we do have a roof garden, and again, we worked with the city to get that built and the local council member. But you know, it's amazing if you can have an in-ground garden, but you can have a really wonderful garden in a little bit of space in some containers. We also, you know, we also have some indoor growing spaces as well. At two of our schools, we have greenhouses, but we also can use like a classroom and maybe have like a growing tower or some kind of hydroponics or something like that. Although we like gardening and soil and, you know, making that connection to the outdoors and the outdoor world. But we'll take whatever space we can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because, you know, there's differences of opinion whether you go with the growing towers and do it hydroponically, or whether we want to teach the kids about the soil and the magic that happens in the soil and how that affects the plants.
Yeah, I mean, we do have some hydroponics, but our program is really based, like, we want to get kids outside. We want to get kids to understand, you know, you talked in your introduction about the kind of interconnectedness of everything, and that's a huge part of our program is getting kids to understand where food comes from. And, you know, part of that is the soil and the environment and the world around them and understanding about systems and, you know, compost. Like, we do a lot of lessons around compost and how this waste from plants or food goes back into the compost and then makes this incredible, you know, black gold that feeds the soil. So where possible, we want to get kids outside. We want to literally have them getting their hands dirty and sort of experiencing that and experiencing growing plants in soil. You know, if that's not an option, like having a, you know, hydroponic tower is great to bring that sort of into the school or into the cafeteria. But we really, you know, our philosophy is very much based on like hands-on gardening and cooking. And so, you know, we want the kids experiencing that as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. And so you said you're in 22 schools in New York. How many students approximately are you serving? Like, when you're in a school, does every student or every class in that school participate? And how does the program actually work?
Yeah, that's our aim. So we have various different levels of programming. So we have, you know, two schools that we call our demonstration sites, which are really, you know, the half acre garden in Brooklyn. We've built a greenhouse and a kitchen classroom. And we have four full-time teachers at those two schools. So at those schools, you know, every single child is coming to gardening or cooking class more or less three times a month. Then we have, you know, other schools where we have a slightly light touch, but our goal is always to see 100% of the kids in the school. We don't want this to be a program. We want this to truly be integrated into the fabric of the school. So we really try and see all the kids in the school. And, you know, part of our philosophy is that, you know, this should be part of your school experience, you know, not just in one grade, but in every grade. So, you know, in some of our schools, we're seeing kids from, you know, pre-K and now even 3K up through eighth grade. So we really try and integrate into the fabric of the school and change the culture of the school around food. You know, that's also part of our goal. You know, the core of our program is the gardening and cooking lessons, and that's what we spend most of our time doing is, you know, teaching kids about gardening and cooking and connecting that with the academics. But we also, you know, we work with the school cafeteria, we work with other nonprofits that do more scratch cooking in schools like Wellness in the Schools and Brigade. You know, we partner with other nonprofits that do more cafeteria work. And we think about, we do after-school programs, we do family programs. We want to bring parents and families in so that, you know, this is also going home as well. So we're really thinking about how we can work with the entire school community and create cultures of wellness around in schools and you know, change that culture of the school so that the schools are thinking about food as sort of holistically and the school food environment holistically.
Mm-hmm. And so do you also, in addition to doing your own cooking with the kids, Does your program affect the school lunch program at all?
We partner with other nonprofits who are more focused on that. So we, we will work with, we work very closely with an organization called Wellness in the Schools, and they put chefs in school cafeterias and do more scratch cooking. There's another organization that just started in New York called Brigade that does very similar things. So we work very closely with them or with the school food providers, and we'll try and do things like, garden to cafe days or focus on salad bar or, bring some of the herbs that we've grown in and do tastings in the cafeteria to really kind of shine a light on the healthier options in the cafeteria. But it's not our primary focus. Our primary focus is really around education and getting kids excited about trying new things, trying real food, making those connections. But we also know that, it's school food. Like, we want to work together to make school food healthier and more delicious. And so we partner with a lot of different organizations who are doing that and support them through our education to get kids excited about eating the healthier options that they're getting.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was great. Starting this year, and correct me if I'm wrong, but school lunch is free for New York City public schools now, right?
Yep, it's universal free school lunch, which is great.
Yeah, it's amazing. So all the students that you work with get their food they still can bring in food if they want, but they get their food and they're entitled to lunch at the schools, right?
Yes, that's right.
Uh-huh. I really want to hear so much more about the lesson plans and the recipes, but I think this is a good time for us to take a little break. And when we come back, maybe you can share some of that with us, okay? Everyone listening,
Great.
Don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Kate Breschers from the Edible Schoolyard NYC. Be right back.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Economic, political, and military decisions in Washington, D.C. impact the entire United States and world. And yet corporate media offers few facts, history, or people's voices about these important issues impacting our lives. I'm Esther Ivarim, inviting you to check out On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital on the Progressive Radio Network. Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We cover social justice activists in the streets and in the suites. We cover those who come to D.C. from across the nation or from across the world to speak truth to power. Whether it's the war machine, the movement for black lives, health care, education, the economy, voting, corporate power, immigration, criminal justice, or environmental justice. Check out On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, Monday, 6 p.m., here on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and I.E. Green on the Progressive Radio Network. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Kay Prashares, the executive director at the Edible Schoolyard NYC. And right before the break, we started to touch on the recipes and lessons that they are actually doing at the Edible Schoolyard in the city. And that's where we're going to pick up. So, Kay, can you tell us what some of the recipes are that you're making and about some of the lessons that you teach during your program?
Sure, yeah. So I guess before I get into the specific recipes, one of the things I should note is that we really try and be culturally responsive to the needs of the students and the different student populations. So we don't have a standard curriculum or sort of standard recipes that we do. All our recipes are, we try and make them seasonal. We try and connect them to what's growing in the gardens or what's growing, you know, in New York at the time. But a recipe that we teach in our Gravesend school that has, you know, an incredibly diverse population, but, you know, a lot of kids from Poland or Russia or Eastern Europe might look very different from a recipe that we'll teach in one of our South Bronx schools where the population is primarily Dominican or Mexican. So, for instance, in Gravesend, we teach a borscht lesson and do a lesson around borscht. In South Bronx, maybe that lesson will be sancocho, which is a Dominican soup. And, you know, our classrooms are vegetarian. We use a little bit of dairy and eggs, but, you know, all vegetarian. But yes, we really try and be culturally responsive. We try and focus on seasonality and connecting the foods to what's growing in the garden, and then connecting it to the student's own culture. So, you know, we might make, let's see, so we do, and we also want the kids to be involved in the recipe. So it's, you know, it's always something that kids can do and also something that we can do within 45 minutes in a classroom. So one of the things that we do sort of across many of our schools is a plant part salad, where we'll use the different parts of the plant that are growing in the garden. You know, maybe we'll do, you know, some kind of fruit, if it's strawberries or tomatoes, and then the leaves and the stems and different seeds, and then have the students design their own dressing so that they can kind of, you know, get the acid and the oil and the different flavorings and the garlic. And also, you know, we're tying our recipes to different things they're learning in the classroom. We try and make academic connections as well. So, you know, with the kindergartners, it may be about color and learning about different colors. With the older students, it's, you know, maybe it's learning about botany or, you know, different parts of the plant in that way. But we really try and connect our recipes to, you know, to what they're learning about in the classroom. We do all kinds of different things. We might make dumplings and you know, and the dumplings will be the different vegetables that are growing, and we'll connect it to the student's culture, whether it's Russia or China or Middle East. We do a lot of salads and simple things. We make a lot of different pestos. We grow a lot of herbs in the garden. We do egg recipes with eggs for my chickens, which is always really exciting. We'll often do a recipe around the Three Sisters, which is a Native American growing, companion growing. So we have the corn, beans, and squash, and we'll make corn, beans, and squash tacos or empanada or different sort of versions using those three ingredients. So we do all kinds of different things, but the primary thing is getting the kids to taste new foods and to, to try new things. Like one of the core goals of our program is getting kids to try new things and to be open to trying new things.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, but I actually started a new position this year as the farm to school coordinator for a local public school on Long Island. They got a New York State grant. And so, I'm working on making the connections with the local farmers and trying to bring fresh vegetables into the school lunch program, as well as doing a harvest of the month taste testing and that kind of thing. Yeah. So, everything that you're talking about that you're doing are things that I'm trying to incorporate as well into our local public school.
That's great. Yeah, and just getting the kids to, try new things and to understand, that there are things growing in New York State as well. Like we'll do Big Apple Crunch. I don't know if you guys have done that, but there's a lot of New York State apples, and getting them to try different kinds of apples and to kind of pick their favorite of the different varieties of apples. Just really simple things like that to expose kids to different flavors and tastes.
No, that's a good idea, though. I like it. and do you pay much attention to whether it's organic or not? I mean, that's one of the things with New York State apples. There's not many that are organic, right?
Right. So we, all our gardens are organic. We grow everything organic, and we try to be organic in our classrooms as well with the food that we purchase and get donated. It's not something that we talk about so much with our students, because we're also very sensitive to the realities of the population that we're working with and the cost of organic food. So while we believe in it and it's something that, we try and do and live in our classrooms, we would rather that our families and our communities are eating, fresh fruits and vegetables. We absolutely believe in it and supportive of it and in our practices. It's really important, but it's not a dogma that we that we really push on our families, because we want to be sensitive to their financial situations, and we also part of our philosophy is also around kind of meeting families where they're at and kind of moving them along the path. So, for instance, when we work in a lot of communities that have a lot of South American students and traditionally a lot of the recipes have a lot of meat. So, for instance, that Dominican soup I mentioned, sancocho, it's traditionally made with meat. And it was actually a parent who I think brought that recipe to us, and then we work to make it vegetarian so that we serve it with, we make it with kind of hearty root vegetables. So we try, it's a recipe that comes from the community, that comes from the family, but we've kind of tweaked it to make it vegetarian and to really focus on vegetables. So we do things like that, trying to kind of get the communities involved and work with them and respect their culinary traditions, but also tweak things so that we're getting kids eating more fruits and vegetables, because that's really at the heart of our program. It's getting to kids to try new things, to eat more fruits and vegetables and whole grains. So that's what we kind of focus on.
Mm-hmm. And when you bring the portable kitchens into the classroom, what does that look like? Do you have a an induction wok? That's what I have. Or do you have a burner? Or, how do you, these you mentioned dumplings. Do you bring a convection oven into the, or do you steam those?
It varies. So we, you know, in some of our schools where we've worked with the city and got capital investment, we've built, you know, kitchen classrooms that have burners, that have stoves, that have ovens. But in most of our classrooms, in most of the schools that we're working with, we'll just work with, you know, little hot plates, induction hot plates, and we'll, or little toaster ovens. So the recipes are pretty simple, and, you know, we'll steam the dumplings or, you know, sometimes pan fry them a little bit. But we're really trying it, very, very simple recipes that you can do with on a little induction burner or stovetop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, like, I would think, important. You know, one thing that's so fascinating is you talk about, you know, paying attention to the culture and the student population, and you mentioned dumplings. And when you think about it, like, every food culture really has some sort of dumpling, right? The Eastern Europeans, the pierogies, the, you know, or the Asian dumplings, or the you know, empanadas,
you know,
Hispanic.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, and
they all love wrapping things in dough. Is really very popular everywhere.
Yep, and that's you know, that's something that we talk about with our students, and, you know, at our school in Gravesend, I think they have something like 50 different nationalities. And so, you know, they have Chinese, but then they have Uzbeki students and Yemeni students and, you know, Russian students, and that they all have some version of this, of, you know, a dumpling. And so it's really cool to see the connections that the students are making, you know, and how food can be this really incredible common language that actually builds community and brings people together. And, you know, one of the things that I love most about our program is at the end of every kitchen class, the kids come together and we, you know, lay the table and make the table look nice and sit down together and share the food that the class has prepared together. So it's kind of creating this ritual around food and around sharing food together. And the kids will, you know, they'll, before they start eating, they'll say, thank you, gardeners, thank you, cooks, and then they'll start eating together. So it's this sort of really lovely moment of kind of community and respecting the food and respecting those who have brought the food to the table, but also the just the action of eating food together and sharing food together really, you know, it builds community. And we, that's something that our classrooms do, I think, really, really well, and our teachers do really well, is creating communities, creating safe spaces for our students, bringing people together, having the students develop teamwork and cooperation and all these really, really important socio-emotional skills that you can learn through working together on something. So it's, that's really, really important to us and to our program.
Absolutely. The thing that's amazing to me is that you're managing to do it really in a single period, like in 45 minutes, you're cooking and you're setting a beautiful table and sitting down and eating.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, our teachers really are incredible. Like, they're the absolute beating heart of our program and just so, so great. And it's, you know, they work really hard to make sure that there's a recipe that you can do all those things in. And some of our classes will do in double periods, so they have a bit more time to kind of, you know, get into it. But sometimes, you know, we don't have a lot of time. And so we're, you know, designing recipes that, or not we, they. They are designing recipes that, you know, can be done very, very simply. And also they'll do a lot of prep beforehand to make sure that, you know, maybe with the younger grades, things will be kind of pre-chopped, or some of it will be pre-chopped, so that the kids can, you know, feel like they are doing things, but there'll be certain things that are prepared ahead of time just to make sure that we can fit everything into one class.
Yeah, I would think you'd have to do some prep ahead of time to make that happen.
Yeah.
So what are the plans for Edible Schoolyard NYC going forward? Are you looking to expand more? Are you at your limit? What does the future look like for you?
Yeah, we would like to expand more. We are, you know, we're always thinking about how we can reach more students. So, you know, we want to go into more schools. We are not in high schools yet, so that's the plan for the next couple of years, to go into high schools and have, you know, have a curriculum that spans pre-K through 12th grade. So that's definitely in our future. So yes, definitely more schools. One of the things that we also do that I haven't mentioned yet is we do a lot of teacher training and professional development. So we, you know, we train others to bring this type of education into their classroom, or to, you know, start a garden or develop a garden or take their garden to the next level or make those garden to kitchen connections. So we do a lot of teacher training as well. We see about 400 to 500 teachers a year through that program. And that's a really great sort of scalable way of reaching more students, because we can't, you know, there are 2,000 schools in New York City. We're never going to be in every school. So training people is a great way of reaching more students, reaching more people. We're focusing more and more on, you know, really working with others, with other nonprofits in our space, with other partners, with the local city council too, and with the Department of Education, to drive policies that support this type of work in schools. Because, you know, the work that we do is of course really important, and we want to do more of it. But the way that real change is going to happen is if policies change that mean that schools are supported to bring this type of work into their classrooms, if teachers are supported, if there's funding at a school level, at a city level, at a Department of Education level. So we're working more and more on the policy front and working with our partners to really try and drive policy change that will support, you know, changes to school lunch, to make school lunch healthier, to support having, you know, schools having funding to do this type of programming, to do edible education, hands-on gardening and cooking programming, because we want every student in New York City to have this type of education and to have this type of experience and you know, to learn about food and health in this really holistic, positive way. So we sort of see our growth as coming both through increasing our direct service, increasing our teacher training, but also increasing our work advocating for change at a policy level in the New York City public schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so great. I mean, because New York City school is already giving free lunch to everybody, the issue that's going on right now with SNAP will not affect New York City public schools. But right now, you know, what our government is trying to do of cutting back the SNAP eligibility so that 3 million people are going to lose their ability to get SNAP benefits, and so many young students and children will be cut off from their free school lunch because they will not meet that eligibility anymore. It's just horrendous, you know, while giving tax breaks to the richest people in the country. It's so infuriating.
It's criminal. Yeah. It really is criminal. And I don't know quite where to start, but as you said at the beginning of the program, like this food is so fundamental to our health, and you know, how can we expect our young people to grow and learn and reach their full potential if they're eating, you know, crap and empty calories and sugar and, you know, soda and, you know, fried food, and we have to do more for our kids, you know,
and we have to look at why that food is so cheap. You know, that food shouldn't be so cheap. I mean, if these corporations were being held accountable to clean up their mess, to pay the fair share of and pay their labor workers, and, you know, to do everything above board, that food would not be cheap. The truth is fresh food would be cheaper, you know, because there's no processing in it. Why wouldn't fresh food be cheaper? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's the food system that is broken, you know. This is not about poor choices. This is about a system that is profoundly broken, and that we, you know, yes, and that's why the, you know, the policy change and the working with companies is so, so important to change those policies and systems.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're almost out of time. Can you just share what steps my listeners can take to improve the school system in their communities?
What people can do?
Is there anything? Yeah. Anything you recommend on a policy level? Get involved with the wellness program.
Get involved with the wellness committee at your school. You know, find out what people are serving at lunch. Make sure your school has a salad bar. You know, go into your kid's classroom and do a little cooking lesson with them. See if your school has a school garden and a volunteer and help to do that. There are tons and tons of programs and grants out there to get school gardens started. And that's, you know, school gardens are like the gateway drug to this, because it's just so fun for kids to work in a school garden. So, yeah, try and get a school garden or get your school garden, get your kids working in the school garden and working with the school garden. Those are things that I would suggest. And just be engaged, you know, at whatever level that you can. And then also just, you know, eat with your kids, like eat dinner with your kids. I think that to me is probably the simplest thing that families can do, is eat together, prepare food together. It doesn't need to be complicated. It doesn't need to take a ton of time. It doesn't have to be expensive. But that act is just so, so important in so many different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Kate, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us. And do you want to just quickly share your website so people can find out more information about Edible Schoolyard?
Yeah, so our website is edibleschoolyardnyc.org. And then we're also on, and you can sign up there for newsletters and, you know, to volunteer if you're in New York. We're also on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and it's at ESYNYC, just at ESYNYC. So just follow us and then you'll know what's going on with us.
Wonderful. Thank you again, Kate, so much for joining me. And everyone out there, thank you so much for joining us this week. I'll see you again next week, and have a wonderful rest of the week. See you next week. Bye for now.